Welcome to this July 2026 review from the Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology. We've got four pieces this time: a brief report on ethnic survival disparities in metastatic melanoma, a continuing medical education review on non-invasive diagnostics for keratinocyte carcinoma, an original cross-sectional study on quality of life in Mohs patients, and a quick surgical pearl for a problem every one of us has cursed at the biopsy table. Let's get into it. First up is a brief report, essentially a focused original study using SEER data, looking at survival disparities between Hispanic and non-Hispanic patients with metastatic cutaneous melanoma in the immunotherapy era. The background here is straightforward. Checkpoint inhibitors have transformed survival in metastatic melanoma over the last decade. But whether that benefit has been distributed equally across ethnic groups is genuinely underexplored, and there's some prior signal, cited from a multicenter international study, that Hispanic patients may have blunted clinical responses to PD-1 blockade compared to non-Hispanic white patients. This paper set out to formally check that against a large national data set. Methodologically, they pulled distant stage cutaneous melanoma patients from SEER-17, diagnosed between 2008 and 2022. Specifically excluding acral, uveal, and mucosal subtypes to keep this a clean cutaneous cohort. They looked at both overall survival and cancer-specific survival at a two-year mark. And importantly, they didn't just run a single Cox model across the whole time span. They broke the cohort into discrete diagnostic eras and ran separate Cox and competing risks fine gray models for each period, adjusting for age, sex, race, and household income. The rationale, which the authors state fairly explicitly, is that they wanted to capture whether a survival gap tracked temporally with the rollout of PD-1 inhibitors around 2014. A fixed single model spanning 14 years would wash out exactly the kind of era-specific effect they were hunting for. The competing risks approach makes sense here too, since in a population with substantial comorbidity and an average age in the 60s, death from other causes is a real competing event that a standard Cox model for cancer-specific survival would otherwise mishandle. On to results. The cohort was about 13,000 patients, the vast majority non-Hispanic, with 815 Hispanic patients. Hispanic patients were younger at diagnosis by about 5 years, more often female, and notably had almost twice the treatment delay, roughly 19 days from diagnosis to treatment versus 10 days in non-Hispanic patients. Histology and systemic treatment rates were otherwise similar between groups. The key finding is a survival gap that essentially didn't exist before 2014 and then opened up and persisted. After 2014, two-year overall survival was meaningfully lower in Hispanic patients, about 34% versus 42% in non-Hispanic patients, and cancer-specific survival showed the same pattern, roughly 41 versus 48%, both statistically significant. In adjusted models, the mortality disadvantage for Hispanic patients was clinically real, not just statistically detectable, about a 25 to 30% increase in hazard of death, consistent across both the Cox overall survival model and the fine gray cancer-specific model, and this persisted through the most recent diagnostic era studied, 2020 to 2022. The authors are appropriately cautious in their discussion. This is registry data, so there's no linkage to actual receipt of immunotherapy at the case level. They can see the disparity emerged coincident with the PD-1 era, but they can't prove it's mechanistically tied to differential drug access or response. They flagged the Hispanic cohort as relatively small, follow-up for the most recent years as necessarily limited, and residual confounding as a real concern. Things like insurance status, language barriers, and specific healthcare navigation barriers aren't captured in SEER, but are proposed as plausible contributors, alongside the treatment delay finding, which itself is a concrete, actionable data point. Practically, this isn't yet a change your Mohs practice tomorrow paper. It's not surgical, and it doesn't tell you what to do differently in the biopsy chair. But it is a genuinely important epidemiologic signal for anyone managing pigmented lesions and referring out metastatic disease. Hispanic patients presenting with advanced cutaneous melanoma may be facing a systemic disparity in outcomes that has emerged specifically in the immunotherapy era, and the treatment delay finding is something we can act on directly, flagging expedited oncology referral and navigation support for Hispanic patients with advanced melanoma, is a reasonable, low-cost practice adjustment while we wait for prospective work to sort out the underlying mechanism. Next is a continuing medical education review, part one of a two-part series on minimally invasive modalities for keratinocyte carcinoma. This installment focused entirely on diagnostics. This is a review article, so there's no methods or results section to walk through in the traditional sense. Instead, it's a structured synthesis of the non-invasive diagnostic landscape, organized modality by modality, with the explicit goal of reducing unnecessary biopsies in patients who have comorbidities, biopsy fear or fatigue, or lesions in cosmetically sensitive areas. The review opens with dermoscopy, which at this point most of us use reflexively, but the numbers are worth having on hand for patient conversations. Dermoscopy increases the odds of correctly diagnosing basal cell carcinoma about eightfold, with sensitivity around 85% and specificity above 98%. There's a nice diagnostic heuristic here. Identifying at least 4 of 6 characteristic dermoscopic features gives about a 99% diagnostic probability of basal cell carcinoma. And for those of us thinking about margins, dermoscopy-defined margins matter. 2mm dermoscopy-guided margins achieved clearance in about 92% of cases, and 4mm margins pushed that to about 98%, figures worth knowing since they bear directly on planning. Similarly, for invasive squamous cell carcinoma, 4mm dermoscopy-guided margins achieved complete resection around 93% of the time, rising to essentially 100% with 8mm margins. The main limitations flagged are the steep training curve, inconsistent performance for distinguishing basal cell subtypes, and a real risk of false positives or negatives with mimickers like angiokeratomas, dermatofibromas, and adnexal tumors, plus degraded accuracy in lesions that have been partially treated already, for instance, with prior cryotherapy. The review then moves into reflectance confocal microscopy, which most surgeons will recognize conceptually as an in vivo optical biopsy reaching 200 to 300 microns deep. The authors note it's available at over 60 centers in the U.S., generally covered by Medicare, with dedicated CPT codes that reimburse comparably to a conventional biopsy and pathology read. For equivocal basal cell carcinomas, sensitivity and specificity both exceed 90%, and when incorporated into practice, it can cut the number needed to biopsy by 2 to 3-fold, a genuinely practical efficiency gain. The trade-offs between the two commercial platforms are spelled out clearly. The wide probe system produces mosaic images comparable to histopathology, but requires a fixed setup that's cumbersome for scanning multiple lesions in one visit, while the handheld probe trades resolution and ease of interpretation for maneuverability across a full body exam. Limitations across the board include the capital equipment cost, variable insurance coverage beyond the covered indications, training requirements for image acquisition and interpretation, and a real risk of false negatives in hyperkeratotic or ulcerated lesions, or when pathology extends beyond that 2 to 300 micron imaging depth. The excerpt provided cuts off as the review transitions toward optical coherence tomography, electrical impedance spectroscopy, tape stripping for genetic or protein biomarkers, and artificial intelligence-based approaches, presumably covered in comparable depth in the full text, with part 2 of the series to follow on minimally invasive treatment modalities. For a practicing Mohs surgeon, the take-home from what's covered here is that dermoscopy and reflectance confocal microscopy have moved from novelty to genuinely actionable tools, with real margin-relevant data and reimbursement pathways already in place, particularly valuable for anticoagulated, cosmetically concerned, or biopsy-averse patients. This is as close to practice-changing as a review article gets, since the evidence base for these two modalities specifically is now mature enough to justify workflow integration if you haven't already. Third, an original cross-sectional study looking at quality of life in keratinocyte carcinoma patients undergoing Mohs surgery. The clinical gap the authors identify is that while keratinocyte carcinoma is enormously common and increasingly framed as a chronic disease in patients with a heavy lesion burden, most quality of life research has used either general instruments that dilute the specific burden of skin cancer, or has focused narrowly on high lesion burden patients without characterizing the full spectrum, and very few studies have actually tried to identify which patient-level factors predict who suffers the most. Methodologically, This was a cross-sectional survey nested within a prospective cohort at a single academic Mohs practice, enrolling over 1,100 patients across nearly 4 years. They used three complementary instruments: a single-item skin cancer care burden score, the General Health SF20, and the Skin Cancer-Specific Skin Cancer Index, plus their own previously developed field cancerization classification system, which stages patients from low to high cumulative actinic keratosis and keratinocyte carcinoma burden. The authors don't spell out every statistical choice, but the use of non-parametric tests, Spearman correlations, Wilcoxon rank sum, and Kruskal-Wallis, follows directly from their finding that the QOL outcome distributions weren't normal, which is a sensible and appropriately conservative choice given how skewed patient-reported outcome data tend to be, especially with ceiling effects, where many patients cluster near the best possible score. The results paint a fairly coherent picture. Younger age, female sex, and family history of skin cancer were all associated with worse skin cancer-specific quality of life, particularly in the emotional and appearance domains of the skin cancer index. For instance, women scored substantially lower than men in the appearance domain. Higher field cancerization class tracked with worse outcomes across nearly every measure. Patients in the highest class reported meaningfully more care burden than those in lower classes, and their skin cancer index and SF20 health perception scores were both clearly lower, with the health perception domain sliding from about 82 down towards 65 points at the top of the field cancerization spectrum. Perhaps the most clinically resonant finding is around healthcare utilization. Patients with the highest frequency of dermatology visits reported dramatically greater care burden and worse emotional scores than infrequent visitors. And immunocompromised patients, despite reporting similar skin cancer-specific scores, had meaningfully worse general health perception, physical functioning, and pain scores, suggesting their quality of life burden is being driven more by general health status than by the skin cancer itself. The authors are upfront about the limitations: single-center cross-sectional design, so no ability to infer causality or track change over time, and everything is self-reported, which invites the usual response and recall biases. There's also the interesting wrinkle that patients with more dermatology visits and worse quality of life could reflect reverse causation just as easily as it reflects genuine treatment burden. Patients who are already struggling emotionally may simply seek more care. Practically, this is a useful but not practice-changing paper in the sense of altering the surgical technique. Its value is in reshaping how we counsel and triage attention during clinic visits. The actionable takeaway is that certain subgroups deserve proactive emotional and appearance-focused counseling rather than reactive response to complaints. Specifically, younger patients, women, those with a family history, and anyone climbing into the higher field cancerization classes. It also validates paying attention to frequent utilizers who may be signaling higher psychological burden rather than simply having more disease. And it's a reasonable prompt to consider incorporating a brief, validated instrument like the Skin Cancer Index into routine care for your highest burden patients, since it captures dimensions, emotional and appearance-related distress, specifically, that a purely oncologic visit might otherwise miss entirely. Finally, a quick surgical pearl, essentially a one-page technique tip rather than a full study, addressing a nuisance every Mohs surgeon and general dermatologist has run into: the punch biopsy specimen that gets stuck inside the barrel, particularly with the smaller 2 to 3 millimeter punches. The clinical problem is that fishing it out with forceps risks crush artifact or fragmentation, which can compromise histopathologic interpretation and occasionally forces a repeat biopsy. The solution proposed here is refreshingly simple. Take a plain 5 milliliter syringe, no needle attached, insert its tip into the back opening of the punch tool, and give the plunger a gentle push to release a small burst of air, which pneumatically ejects the specimen out the front without any mechanical contact or compression. There's no formal comparative data here. This is a technique pearl, not a trial. But the logic is sound and the appeal is obvious. It requires no additional equipment beyond something already sitting in every procedure room, adds negligible time, and eliminates the crush artifact risk entirely. This is the kind of small, zero-cost technique adjustment worth adopting immediately in your own practice, particularly for those smaller punch sizes where specimens tend to wedge most stubbornly. That wraps our 4 articles for July. To summarize the actionable threads, the SEER melanoma disparity data should prompt attention to expedited referral pathways for Hispanic patients with advanced disease. the diagnostic review affirms that dermoscopy and reflectance confocal microscopy are now mature enough for real workflow integration with margin-relevant data behind them. The quality of life study should sharpen who you flag for proactive emotional and apparent-centered counseling, and the syringe technique is a free, immediate upgrade to your biopsy routine. Thanks for listening.